Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips of the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th of October, Anno Domini 2016, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Google unveiled a gaggle of new products and services on Tuesday at its event in San Francisco. Hashtag made by Google. First up were the new Pixel phones. These sleek devices are the first phones designed by Google inside and out, quote unquote. The accuracy of that claim is perhaps debatable, but the devices are definitely focused on the pure Google experience. The specs are flagship level with a 12.3 megapixel camera that scored higher than even the mighty iPhone 7 in tests. A new camera app means microscopic shutter lag, intelligent HDR photos, and anyone buying a Pixel gets unlimited storage of full resolution images in the cloud, both for video and for still photos. It runs Nougat, the latest version of Android, and sports a shiny new Pixel launcher, which is clean, round, and very Google first. An omnipresent Google bar slides out from the top. A long hold on the home button brings up the Google Assistant. And, of course, the company's new Allo chat app comes pre-installed. Options are blue, which were sold out in the first hour, black and silver, which is, of course, actually white, a 5 or 5.5-inch screen, and 32 gig or 128 gig of RAM. They start at $650, and yes, there's a headphone jack. Google also demonstrated its assistant, the AI that will soon live on all its devices, and perhaps others as well. It's meant to be a powerful and relatively open system that can be used not just as an OK Google thing, but as a chatbot and connected speakers, TVs, and so on. The vision is Google Assistant everywhere, whenever you need it, for whatever you need at that moment. There's also a compact VR controller with motion sensors and a clickable trackpad. Switching gears to the home, Google Wi-Fi was next to be introduced. It's a puck-shaped router that you buy a few of, scatter throughout your house, and enjoy perfect wireless signals forever as they intelligently switch your network up. The things cost $130 a piece. I lied to you, Dave. It's $130. Or $300 for a three-pack.
All right, that's it. I'm going home.
There you go. $300 for a mesh network in your home. That's cheap. Chromecast got a minor update. The Ultra adds 4K HDR images and Dolby Vision, all of which should mean something to you if you're a TV or movie buff. The new device also has an Ethernet port built into the power brick, if you can believe it, so you can hardwire it. $70 in November. Google Home, which I've already ordered, which was teased back at I.O., got an official price and ship date, $130 and November 4th. Of course, it's actually $129. The Home is very much an answer to Amazon's popular Echo, and many of the use cases demonstrated on stage are common between the two. One nice addition is Google's Knowledge Graph, which fetches info for lots of factual queries. Who was the first person in space? What's the biggest breed of cat, etc.? In a concession to privacy, the only actual button is a mute that cuts off the mic, so you can be sure you're not being listened to. The Home has a nice little speaker set built in, comes with 6 months of YouTube Red, and hooks in with your Internet of Things, should you have one, assuming it hasn't been hacked already. Naturally, it works with Chromecast and can interact with your phone. If you get a chance, check out the video from the announcement. It's actually pretty flippin' cool. And that's it. Google was really stressing interconnectivity. The more of their gadgets you have, the better they all work together. Not that that's a unique proposition. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google intros, lots of hardware, hashtag made by Google. Your choices are, I want them all, really interesting stuff. Yeah, they're not Apple, so, and meh. So far, we've got 17 votes, and really interesting stuff followed by meh is is on top. And, oh, they're tied right at the moment, as a matter of fact. 14 apiece, and then a couple of people want them all, and one person, they're not Apple. That must be you, Steve.
I haven't voted yet.
All right. The Mesh Network sounds good.
Well, hold on. Let me finish. Don't forget, if you have more to say about this before Dave does, you can join us in the forum. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forum's first choice, and in the forum is the second choice down is the poll discussion. And so far, at least, the first thing in the poll discussion is forum 8 October 16, Google intros lots of hardware, hashtag made by Google. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Now, you said that the mesh networks, that still what? You got to get three, or can they give you a deal if you get two?
No, you get two, it's going to cost you $260. You get three, it costs you $300.
Okay.
So the deal is for three.
Yeah, you got to get better to get three.
But yeah, well, and you know, that last one costs you $40. So yeah. You know, what the hell? But the basic idea is what, for those of you who don't know, a mesh network is kind of an automatic setup. Everything works together, and they kind of relay themselves. So they're like a relay or whatever, but they're much easier to set up. You just turn it on and bang, you're
like
done.
It's like a wireless entry point. You know, a wireless station. And like you were saying, this just happens, as I like to put it, automatically.
Automatically.
You know, you just hook it up, it connects, it's smart enough to find it. Oh, there it is, and away it goes. I only have one other issue.
Yeah.
And I'm going to become another mini Nick. Hey, guys at Greenlight.
Yeah.
Come on down Empire Boulevard.
Yeah.
I gotta get
not
Greenlight.
Until they get to Moseley Road.
Oh, heck with it. They're already in Irondequoit. They're all over the place. I mean, there's enough businesses, the fire department and Dan's Crafts and all these other places. Get in there. You know, there's businesses. I mean,
yep.
Now, I gotta have Greenlight now. I'm gonna sound as bad as you.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's one.
I mean, you sit there, and we were talking before, you know, I had an interesting go-around with our famous cable company.
Yeah.
And I can see why more and more folks are wanting to cut the cord or cut the cable. Because, you know, they keep going up and up and up, and you're wondering, once this transition to the new company, what's going to happen there? You know, because they sit there and say, well, you know, if we add phone into that, we can save you a little bit. I go, wait a minute. How many folks really need a home phone? I says, I purposely got rid of mine because the only phone I use is my cell phone.
That's right.
And that's the way most people are. They're getting rid of their landlines because everybody is connected through a cell phone.
That's right.
Well, it is a package deal. I said, does me no good. I said, no.
Yeah. And many, many people are finding that when they cut the cord, all they have to do is have semi-fast internet in order to do everything that they've been doing as well as they've been doing it. Except for a few channels, like you said, the Hallmark Channel.
Yeah.
Not available in any streaming service.
Yeah, there. I wonder, you know, how long it'll be before they cave. Because,
well, I don't think it's that. I think it's leftover contracts with cable companies. That used to be the cable company was the only way to get your channel distributed. So, all right, I'll give you a 20-year exclusive because there is nothing else. Well, that was 18 years ago. Now we have to wait for the contract to run out before we can do anything else.
Right.
Yeah, because like I say, there are, well, CBS is now, you know, all the major channels are, you know, like you said, Steve, offering services where you can stream them.
Yep.
And as I was telling you, that one antenna through RCA is great for getting your local stations. It has
in high def for free.
Well, this is the thing. Yeah. As I was telling Nick, most high def, because I've been doing tons of research since I got my latest cable bill and went through the roof. You know, I was doing research on these new antennas. And a lot of them are, you know, like 180 degree. Well, the new RCA ones will do 360. And this one happens to do up to 60 miles. I mean, you really probably don't need it, but, I mean, you can still get all the channels that you want, 8, 10, 13, CW, Fox, and all those other XXI and yada, 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 and a few others.
And you can get them maybe from Buffalo and Syracuse, too.
For free.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, all right, well, I can handle that. And then if you get like a, like, you have Roku, don't you?
I do, but I mostly use the Apple TV box because I'm a mostly Apple household.
Okay. Right. But yeah, but I ordered one of those because, again, you
can. The new Rokus are very cool.
Yeah, I've got the Plus coming. It just came out yesterday, was just released yesterday. I just got a notice that it's just being shipped. So you hook that up and you can get, like, say, a service like Sling. And I'm not promoting any of these, but it just happens to be one of them for $20.
Yep.
So you cut your cable bill down quite a bit. If you sit there, and which kicked it into me, reality is looking at what I actually watch. And, you know, it's like, what I'm paying, it's like, you know what? I'm not
And Sling is an interesting company. So the current Sling TV service is internet-based television channels.
Mm-hmm.
Twenty or thirty of the most popular channels for $20 a month. You can add a sports package for another $10 a month. So they are, in essence, becoming a cable TV network. But the Sling box that they've been selling for years does something I wish all the DVRs would do. You can, when, say, you're not at home, you can log into your home network and watch the stuff on your DVR.
Right.
So, you know, you're stuck in a waiting room for an hour, you watch something on your DVR. Or in many households, you know, you're in the office and your spouse is watching the main TV, you can watch something on your DVR.
Yep.
And that's been the Sling box forever. And that could easily be added to current DVR services. But again, I'm guessing that's distribution contracts. Is that,
well, like I say, the Sling is available, you know, through the new Roku. And I was just also reading, evidently, I think it's Hulu Plus. It's also going to, down before the year's out, offer a service comparable to Sling.
Yep.
So it's going to be interesting to see what like that. And what I like also about these is there's no long-term contract.
Right.
You can quit anytime you want.
Right, right, right. And if you've got a fast enough internet connection, then you can easily get all this stuff
mean like green light if it was in my neighborhood?
Exactly. I'm telling you, I love it.
I hope those guys listen to us.
I love it. You know what? I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll charge you guys just $10 a week to come to my house and use my connection.
Nice.
Okay. For you guys, $8. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Sam from West Henrietta, New York. What's up, Sam?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Nick, I had sticky notes. I went from Windows 7 to 10, and the sticky notes is erratic. I got it on my taskbar, but when I click it, all I got is a blank sheet.
Have you checked them for an update for Windows 10 compatibility?
No. How do you do that?
Go to the company that makes that program and see if they have an update.
Yeah, it's an app that you download from, I think it comes right through the Windows Store.
Would it be the Microsoft Play Store?
What I would suggest that you do you had it on 7?
Okay. 7 went to 10, and it worked. And all of a sudden, for some reason, now
the anniversary,
can't find them. Like,
the anniversary update. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I might suggest you do is, do it in this order. First, go into the App Store, the Microsoft Store.
Okay.
And make sure that the app is available in the store.
Okay.
If it is, delete it from your system and then reinstall it from the store.
And theoretically, that won't do anything to your notes. It will just replace the application.
Theoretically, but you might want to back up whatever notes are important to you anyway.
But if they don't open now, then it's too late.
Right, right.
I don't know. You know.
Right, right, right. Mm. But that's what I would suggest you do, because there have been updates and there have been changes, and it is certainly within the realm of possibility that the old version is not updating to the new version for whatever reason.
Gotcha. Okay.
By itself, right? So uninstalling it and installing it. And that's true of any app you find that may not be working well. Save the data, back up the data, delete the app. First, make sure it's in the store. And then back up the data, delete the app, and then reinstall it from the store and restore your data.
Okay. That sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Good luck.
Hey, when you guys have those Google meetings, where's the Briarwood building?
The Briarwood building, it's in St. John's Meadow. And if you go in the main door and around to the right, it's really the first one around the corner. There's that first little parking lot off the right. That's the building.
Okay, you got, I mean, he's got signs up saying Briarwood, or he's got your sign?
There is a sign on the front, yeah.
Okay, good.
All right,
sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dave. No, we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Larry?
I'm Dave. Good afternoon, guys. I have two infuriating questions, so I'll start with the one that's the less infuriating.
Sure.
The first is a Mac problem.
Okay.
When the machine goes to sleep now, after it's been off for a while, often it will require me to type my ID in, my name, and then my password. And the machine will actually go through a complete reboot, if you will. Then I can get in, and then at that point, it simply asks me to put my password in. Now, these are things it didn't do before. And then sometimes overnight, if I leave the machine on, it'll ask me to do that. And then I'll put the password in. It won't accept a password. You know, it just sits there and jiggles when you know it's not right. And then I literally just turn the machine off and turn it back on. And then it starts through the whole reboot process again, and then it'll let me in for a while. And it's just gotten to the place it's infuriating.
What model is this?
This is an iMac. I bought it December 2013.
Did you recently do the Sierra upgrade on it?
Yes, the Sierra upgrade's on it.
So that's probably where something changed. I would say start by going into your energy saver system preference and check your settings there.
Right.
Make sure that there isn't a scheduled shutdown or restart.
Right.
And then there's another one, the security preference.
Right.
There's an auto logout preference.
In the security and privacy?
Security and privacy under advanced. There's an auto logout when idle.
Okay. So
which is good security, but annoying when you have to log yourself back in again.
Well, for a laptop that you take somewhere.
Especially, yeah.
Or a machine in an office. Yeah. But in the home, it's just an annoyance.
Yeah. So there's two settings. There's one to require a password on the screensaver. And then if you authenticate, you can get to the advanced button. And there's an option to, and I can't type and talk at the same time, apparently.
Well, Wiggly chews gum, folks.
There's an advanced button where you can also set an auto logout. So it will log out of the computer after X number of minutes as well, requiring you to log back in again.
Hmm. Okay, so that's under, let me follow this along. And the security and privacy, if I go to the privacy button.
No, you start at general, and there's require a password after X seconds.
Right.
And then there's an advanced button.
At the bottom of that screen.
Bottom right.
Oh.
Which lets you set the auto logout.
Okay.
And there's another setting in there that people miss sometimes is, and why it's hiding down there, is you can turn off the infrared receiver. Apple makes remote controls for the Apple TV.
Uh-huh.
And the same remote control works on Macs because in the early days, 15 years ago now, when iTunes came out, there's a remote control that came with your computer that would control iTunes to play and pause and next song and whatnot. And Apple, in their infinite wisdom, or lack thereof, every remote operates on the same frequency. So every remote will control everybody else's stuff.
Brilliant.
So you have a Mac and an Apple TV near each other. Your remote that runs the Apple TV will also do things on your Mac. So you hit play on the Apple TV and iTunes will launch and start playing on your computer. So you can turn off that infrared receiver. It is fun, though, going into a computer store with your own remote and making their computers do stuff.
Oh, okay.
newer model computers don't have the infrared receiver anymore. On the iMacs, it's actually behind the Apple logo. On the laptops, you can kind of see it in the front near the sleep light, if it has an infrared receiver. But they've taken those out of the newer models.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of fell out of favor to have a remote control for your computer.
Right.
You now, use your iPhone for that now.
Let me just back up a moment again. Under privacy, systems preferences, yep. The general button.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's appearance, highlight, color, sidebar, show, scroll, click, default, browser.
No, you got to go into system and privacy first and then general.
I'm in it now. I'm in systems and privacy.
Yeah.
Or systems and preferences. I'm sorry.
No, that's you missed. In system preferences, go to security and privacy.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And then general.
General.
Require a password after X seconds or minutes.
Yeah,
or hours.
I have that checked.
Yeah.
And I have immediately checked.
So as soon as the screensaver activates, the lock turns on, and you'll need to type in your password to get
right.
back into the computer.
Right.
And then in the bottom right corner, there's an advanced button.
Oh, I see. You have to unlock the little lock to get at it.
Authenticate
right.
to get into that advanced tab, yeah.
Let's see if I can do that quickly while I...
Well, if you've got a second question, we kind of have to move on.
Okay. All right. So I'll do that later then. Second question is on my grandson's laptop. It's a Lenovo Yoga 2, and I decided I would do the first update to Win 10, and I think it's kill the PC.
Yeah, sure.
I started yesterday morning at about 11 a.m., mm-hmm. and, you know, it went through all the background checks and everything, and it says, okay, it looks like it'll go on, and then it started. That took a while, and then at the end, it went and it said, okay, we're going to restart, and this may take a while because we'll be, you know, rebooting the system or restarting the system.
The infamous right.
Well, as of 11 o'clock at night, last night, it was still going. Finally, the screen started to flicker, and it went out, and it hasn't come back on since. Now, I can't tell whether the PC itself now is on, but the screen is dead, or what.
Okay, is it plugged in somewhere?
It's plugged in.
Okay, and you've tried restarting, and you've tried the power button or whatever, and
yes, I have.
None of that works.
Yes, I have.
Can you plug into a different monitor?
Yeah.
Now, the thing that is when it boots up, do you see the normal, the logo for the system and that type of stuff?
No, screen's just black now, so I can't tell if anything at all is happening. I did try tapping the enter button a couple times, and I heard a little beep, beep. It must be doing something, but the screen's completely black. So
let me suggest this.
All that time trying to get it upgraded, it
okay.
burned the screen out, or what?
Here's the thing. It probably didn't burn the screen out. Mm-mm. Although what may have happened is that it may be on a different screen. Remember, these are laptops, and they have an external connector for an external screen.
Okay.
So it may have accidentally gone to that external screen. There are a couple of things you can try. First is, after it boots up, and I don't know the Yoga 2 very well, so I don't know if there are any external lights at all.
Okay.
But if there are, and they don't come on, then you've got a hardware problem.
Okay.
But if mm-hmm. if you get any kind of lights at all, and it eventually, you know, finishes whooping and whirring, and then it's just sitting there, there should be a keystroke combination that changes where the video goes, internal, external, both.
Yeah, it's usually shift key
right.
or FN key and one of the keys along the top.
There's
you see like two screens.
Yeah, usually the little tiny icon of what's supposed to look like a screen or two screens to switch back and forth.
Right.
Okay, so on FN F10, there is a little, I guess you would call it a Windows icon. One is black and the other one would represent
maybe
something on the
yeah.
screen.
Like
so,
I said,
yeah.
I don't know the Yoga 2 very well. But
right.
what I would suggest you do is do that function, whatever that key is.
Right.
Wait a minute. If nothing happens, function in that key again. And eventually it should come back if, in fact, the machine is on and just going to a wrong screen.
Okay. The only light I have is on the on-off button on the side. It does light up, and you can hear a little click when you power it up, right, does go out if you hold it long enough and the machine powers itself down. Those are the only visual indicators you have.
Well, that's and that is understandable. And, of course, because the Yoga 2 has an SSD drive, you can't even hear the hard drive.
One of the other things, though, that I ran into in doing a Windows 10 upgrade, if you plug in an external monitor, sometimes because the video card monitor is messed up in the laptop, it will switch to an external display.
Right.
And this is how I found out through this other machine that I was working on that it really doesn't support Windows 10. If they got it on once, it was a miracle. But after doing some research, it would not run Windows 10, and especially the newer edition.
So here's the thing. The reason I suggested what I suggested first, because it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's fast.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, Dave is right. You need to plug in an external monitor. And I believe there's an HDMI connector on the Yoga 2. And plug in an external monitor and see if, in fact, that works. And if it does, now you got to make a choice, right? See if you can get the internal video to work, and that may require a different driver. It may just be the button, like I said. But if it works externally, at least until you solve the problem for real, your grandson can still use the laptop with an external monitor. I realize that negates the whole purpose of a laptop.
One thing he could do, though, Nick, is if he is lucky enough to get into that and, get it up on the screen, go back into your restore point and try to go back to your original Windows 10 restore point.
Okay.
That's true. But you can also try to solve the problem first if you can.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just taking quick notes here, and I'll give it a try as soon as I'm off.
All right, good luck.
All right, thank you so much.
Yep-er.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Yeah, one of the issues with any machine, whether it's a Mac or a PC or a Linux box, is there are often several places where you can set something similar.
Yeah, yep.
So having the timeout for when the lock when it goes into sleep mode or screensaver mode is one thing, but then having the other kind of lock in a different place is an entirely different thing. When both of them are on, you think they're related problems because they both go back to the password.
Yep, but they're not.
But they're not actually related. Yep. They're not a single solution issue.
I had a weird problem today, similar to that. The computer was turning on. Hitting the caps lock makes the light come on to let you know the computer's still on computers that still have a caps lock key. But no video. So one of the things we do is we plug in an external monitor to see. As soon as I plugged in the external monitor, the internal goes ping. And there it was. What the heck does that mean?
I don't.
Maybe it was trying to do a switch, to an external. And then once it did find it, it went back to the original?
Maybe.
Crazy. Like Nick was saying, though, you know, there's different things that could be switched or toggled that it's trying to do one thing and it can't.
I got the call this week that I dread it, that everybody dreads. I get a call. My wife's at work. Honey?
Uh-oh.
Yeah? My machine did something overnight, some sort of upgrade. Oh, the anniversary update, yeah.
Uh-oh.
And I'm looking at a spinning black screen with a little spinning balls at the bottom. I said, yeah, that means it's working. And just wait a while and it'll be fine. She said, how long is a while? Could be 10 minutes, could be half an hour. She said, it's been doing this since Monday. And this is Wednesday.
It's working really, really hard.
Okay, I'll come down. Nothing. I couldn't get it to do anything. Well, I told her first, unplug. I know she's got an external backup drive.
Mm-hmm.
Unplug that because that's known to be an issue. Any sort of anything plugged into the USB.
Any other peripherals.
Right. That isn't the keyboard and the mouse.
Bare minimum. Yep.
Right. And so she did that. And I said, if it doesn't work, if it hasn't done anything by the time lunch comes around, call me. I'll come down. So, of course, I go down. And nothing. It's not doing anything. It won't respond to anything at all. I said, well, luckily, you have a backup because we know the backups are working because I was looking at those as well.
Oh, I've been getting an error about that for a few months now. I've been meaning to tell you.
Yeah. No. I know the backups work. So I said, here's what I'm going to do. It's kamikaze time. I'm just going to turn it off, turn it back on, see what happens. I turned it off, waited a half a minute, turned it back on again. And the son of a gun things comes up and says, Installing Windows, 76%. Please do not turn off your computer.
Yep.
Okay. We waited about 15 minutes, and bam, it was done, and it was back up again. And I thought, you know, my wife's, oh, honey, that's amazing. You're wonderful. I said, yeah, I was a monkey. I was a monkey.
You were
I
lucky
turned it
on off,
I turned it on again.
You never admit that to someone.
I didn't admit it to her. That's for sure. Oh, laddie, you didn't tell them how long it really takes,
yeah.
Did you?
Just turn it off and turn it back on. That'll fix it.
That fixed it. It was very weird, but I could do it because we had a backup. I knew we had a good backup. Then, of course, it turned out we didn't have a good backup. That's a separate story. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites members of Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Smiley from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Smiley?
Oh, I'm still playing with Windows 10.
Yep, you were having... it was in La La Land last week.
Yeah, well... I've got it out. I think it's my fifth time putting it on since then.
Great.
And it does
makes
not
perfect.
Like any USBs plugged in.
Right.
It might be just this computer or something. Okay?
No, it's all of them. If you start the Windows 10 update, this is for everybody. If you start the Windows 10 update, make sure you have nothing else plugged into USB. Maybe mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, that's about it.
But nothing else.
Okay. Now, another thing. Right now, it's doing the anniversary update. It's spinning right now. Okay?
Yeah.
But when I had it on, because I reformatted the, well, let's go back. When I had it on, it had like an old Windows old. So I decided I'm going to erase some of that, you know, get rid of that. So I went in with that cleanup. It didn't take it out, so I said, I know how to do that. So I went in, and I started erasing, but then it says you weren't authorized to erase these.
Right.
So I got a lot of the stuff out. And then when I rebooted, a lot of my stuff was missing.
Well, yeah.
And so then I go, well, heck, that sucks. So I said, I'm going to redo it again. So I did it this morning, and I had a in the circle there, you can have an icon. You know, a picture or what on boot up?
Yeah.
Well, I had the old one. I reformatted the whole hard drive, and when it booted up, I checked there was no Windows old or anything. Okay, so it should have been a bare hard drive with this new, but it had some stuff from before. So I don't know if it's picking up from Windows.
Okay, that's very weird.
Buy things, you know, and they say, "Oh yeah, we've worked with this computer before. We're going to put some of this stuff back."
Are you putting in your Microsoft account during the setup to like authorize the Windows 10 download, or when you log into Windows?
Yeah, you have to have it.
Yeah,
you can't get anything else if you don't.
Right,
right. It probably synced some of your photos and documents the last time you used it, and when you log into the Windows again, it's going back to that synced data and saying, "Oh, he must want this data. Let's download it."
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Yeah.
But another thing I noticed, it misspelled my name in the user's account, so I wanted to change it. I can't change it, so...
Yeah, once you've created a user account, you're kind of done, particularly if it's the owner, system owner.
Yeah, well, and then besides that, there's no rename in the context
right.
menu.
Right.
Make a new one, delete the old one after you've saved all your data off.
Yeah, well, I'm going to try that. I'm having fun with it, though. It's a real learning experience. It's nothing like Linux.
Yeah.
I mean, in Linux, you want to do something. Both. If you, you know, if you're a little geeky, you can even go into the where you're not supposed to go and do it, you know?
Right. Well, the big difference has always been for both Windows and the Mac. Some things you can do and some things the operating system decides for you. Because it knows better than you do.
And that was the early intent to make, you know,
right.
what Steve Jobs called the toaster computer. We want a computer easy enough that average people can use it. You don't need a science degree. You don't need to know how to program. You just put it in and make your toast.
Right. Yeah. But for people who want that, you know, down to the bare level ability to do things. It's a difference between people who just want to buy a car to go to the store and hot rodders, right? For that, you're a Linux person. That's simply the way that works.
And that's kind of nice about the Mac now is you've got that terminal window and that whole shell under there. And you can do things without ever looking at the GUI.
Yeah.
If you really want.
Another thing I...
when did I install Wireshark?
Explorer. They do have a Classics Explorer for Win 10. You have to specify.
Yeah.
And I had that on when I first put the Windows 10 on here, and I put it back on again. Because I don't want them stupid squares up there and that, what do you call it? And I got rid of the, over in the right-hand corner, acknowledge thing that keeps coming up.
And right.
I got rid of that sucker.
Okay.
And then otherwise, it's fun to play with. I don't know how many times I'm going to be putting it. I'll probably wear it out from putting it on the hard drive. I'll put it on, right next to it so many times.
But eventually, you're going to be a whiz at it.
And if you really like, Power Toys for Windows 10. Now, Power Toys has been one of the premier Windows tweaking programs to tweak some of the weird settings that the average user never knows is in there. You can do some really crazy stuff in Windows if you want to.
Right. And remember, though, with great power comes great ability to screw up everything.
Yep.
I'm going to run LibreOffice on it, not Microsoft.
Well, good for
you.
There
you go.
And there's a couple other programs that I run in Linux that I'm going to run on here that I know are run on Windows.
Yep.
I hope I helped somebody out. Maybe I didn't. So I'll let you get back to your calls. I don't want to take up all your time.
Thanks, Smiley.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have fun.
All right.
LibreOffice, of course, is a free office suite. It's got a word processor and a spreadsheet and a presentation program and a database. And it's absolutely free, and it has 99% of the stuff that most people use in Microsoft Office. But of course, instead of paying hundreds of dollars for it, it's free. And it reads and writes Microsoft Office files. So for those of you who still want to have an Office suite on your system rather than using something in the cloud, Microsoft Office is a very nice product. If you're looking for something lighter weight because you have an older machine with a lot less power, there are things like ABI Word, which is a full-blown word processor, again, that reads and writes Microsoft Word documents. And there's a spreadsheet whose name I can't remember off the top of my head that it does much the same stuff. So you can, your alternatives
are many.
To spending money for Office are large.
Yeah. I mean, Google Docs.
Right. And 99% of it is the same from system to system to system. So, people get scared. We have a certain amount of fear of something new. And you don't have to be afraid because most of it is the same. And the few things that are different are things most people generally don't use.
Well, like you said, it's like, a new car.
Yep.
It drives the same, but the controls and all that might be in different places. And you just got to take the time and effort.
Right.
And not just say, oh, the hell with this, because I'm used to it being here. Yeah, maybe that's the way Microsoft did it, but there other companies might do it a little different, but it's still usually all in there.
Right.
And,
you know what? I tell people this all the time. I said, a week from now, you won't remember you had an issue.
No.
You just won't remember because you'll have, if you use it every day, if you use it all the time, it'll take you a week. If not, it'll take you a couple of weeks. Big deal. Mm-hmm. Big deal. If you're saving hundreds of dollars, if that's not worth maybe a couple of days of misery, and not even misery, just inconvenience.
Well, that's what I love about my Chromebook. Again, I just had to do up a letter. And I just pulled down Google Docs, typed it up, did the spell checking that on it, saved it, sent it off, and boom.
I did that the other day. My wife asked me for something that I had saved on the network. And I said, well, no, I can't give it to you right this second because I was sitting across from her at the dinner table. But I reached down for my laptop, which was sitting right there, and I said, my Chromebook. And I said, but I'll have it for you in 10 seconds.
Oh, that's one thing I did is I downloaded a template for the labels that I needed.
Yep.
and you know, it was used, it's like a Word format. So I pulled it up in Google Docs, opened that up in Google Docs, put all the information that I want to put on these stickers so I can get green light in my area. And I did all those stickers up. But again, the template, I opened it up in Google Docs. It was no problem. Filled it all out, saved it. It's there on my desktop, printed off the labels. Worked perfect.
The only issue between all of these is, do you have the same font? And
which,
that's honestly,
which is even a problem Windows to Windows.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a problem if you don't use the standard fonts, Times Arial. Roman, Arial, Courier, then you run the risk that the other person doesn't have that font. But other than that, they're the same.
Okay, hold on.
You know, I had one guy who just hated Google Docs. I said, what's the problem? He says, well, everything looks different. Hold well, on. Where did you get this font? Oh, I downloaded it from some website. Well, there you are.
Yep.
Unless you find that same font and uploaded it, you know, and installed it in your template in Google, you're not going to have the same font. That's easy enough. All right, we got about a minute. Nope, apparently we don't have anything. All right.
That was my mistake. I tried transferring.
Okay, Bob,
everything.
Please call back. Dave fumble-fingered you, and we need you to call back so that we can get you on the air.
Here we go.
Here we go. He's back. It'll take but a moment to move us forward. Do we have time for a call? I guess we must. All right. We'll see if it happens this time. You'll have to pot him up. There we are. Bob, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. It's Bob from Rochester, New York. What do you got, Bob?
Just a short one for you. Would you spend a couple minutes on password managers? Because I'm just experimenting with them. And I'm experimenting with a free Dashlane password manager. Could you just spend a couple minutes on that and recommend maybe two or three, and I'll let you go, and you can just talk about it.
Sure. Thanks, Bob.
Okay.
Okay, password managers in general. The whole idea behind a password manager is
maybe two or three.
Rather than, you want to pat them down. There we go. Rather than having to remember 1,000 passwords, which I know you like to pretend you can't do, what you do is you put them into the password manager, and then you only have to remember one password, the one that gets you into your password manager. Now, there are a bunch of them out there. NPass happens to be the one I use, but there's LastPass and a half a dozen others. Some of them work through your browser. Some of them work as programs on your system. And depending on what you want to do. So LastPass... And what's the other one that we...
1Password.
1Pass.
KeePass.
KeePass is the one. All those password managers have a lot of interesting features. One of the things that they have is the ability to generate passwords. So if you've got... If you're the sort of person who also likes to pretend you're too stupid to figure out making new passwords, that will do it for you. And it generally makes very, very... complex ones. But again, you don't have to remember them because you can also generally do a copy paste sort of thing to it. Dashlane 4 is a very nice product. It's $40. Soho Vault is 12. LastPass is free, or you can pay $12 for the premium version,
which lets you synchronize between your devices.
Right. I'm using NPass, which cost me which was free on my desktop and cost me a couple of bucks for my phone. So one of the nice things is you can get a version that also will go on your phone. So if
which
I'm,
is especially nice if you use a long, hard-to-remember password. It also means it's hard to type on your phone keyboard.
Well, yes, yes, yes. But it'll help you remember what they are. And you know, if you're at a strange machine or whatever, you can get at them. And particularly for those of you who often reinstall software, if you reinstall your operating system and you need to remember the password for that, you can get that off of your phone while you're doing the reinstallation and can't get at your password manager on your computer. So there are just lots of them. Like I said, RoboForm is one, Password Boss, Log Me Once, LastPass, NPass, PassKeeper, KeePass, Dashlane. And so there, and many of these will sync up to a cloud version so that you can get exactly the same set of passwords on anything. So, yesterday, for example, I, created a new password in EnPass on my desktop and came downstairs and suddenly realized I needed it. And I just took out my phone and it was there. So it's easy to do. It's fast to do. And the only password I absolutely must remember is the one to turn on EnPass.
And I've posted a link to a Security Now episode where they're discussing password managers and the security and lack of security in some of them as well.
Right, right. All right. That music tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But we're going to get a chance to do it again because we all need to reinforce the lesson. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we will be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe on the truly great, and let's not forget this, thanks to all of you, it is solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
I wonder if that's a relative.
He must be. I cannot imagine there's an Enright within 700 miles isn't related to
you.
Well,
I'm just trying to find out where they fall.
Yeah, right. Could be a second, 12th cousin, three times removed, yeah. But they're going to be related to you somehow. With the number of Enrights.
We're slowly taking over the station.
Yeah, clearly. As a start.
Yeah.
All right. On Monday, Apple began automatically downloading Mac OS Sierra to Macs that have yet to upgrade to the new operating system, taking a step that Microsoft rival was criticized for last year. Although the upgrade to Mac OS 10.12 will automatically download to eligible Macs, it will not automatically install. Instead, users must authorize the upgrade after being notified that it has been retrieved and is ready to install. Users may also decline the upgrade at that same notification. This marks a change from past practice for the Mac's operating system, formerly dubbed OS 10, but now labeled Mac OS. On Mac, automatic downloading has been available for all software except major releases until today, an Apple spokesrobot said. Previously, step updates, those identified, for instance, as 10.11.4, were automatically downloaded to appropriate Macs, but what the Apple spokesrobot called major releases, the now annual upgrades, had not been automatically pushed to Macs. The auto-download of Sierra puts Mac OS on equal footing with other operating systems from Apple. Both iOS and tvOS automatically download major upgrades to devices. An iPhone, for example, will eventually retrieve updates and upgrades without additional authorization, even if the user has repeatedly postponed downloads through the nag-like alerts. Sierra will auto download to Macs running 10.5.11 or 10.11, excuse me, 10.11.5 or 10.11.6, the last two updates to OS X Yosemite, said Apple, assuming the system's users have left the settings in the App Store section of preferences unchanged from their defaults, which most people do. Those out-of-the-box settings include enabling of automatic downloads. The pertinent line in the App Store's option reads download newly available updates in the background. Apple has taken steps to reduce possible criticism of the change. The Sierra upgrade, which tips the scale at 4.8 gigabytes, will not auto-download to a Mac short of storage space. And if the Mac storage shrinks sufficiently before Sierra is installed, but after the upgrade is downloaded, the file will automatically be deleted. Microsoft made a similar change to its decades-old upgrade and update practices last year with Windows 10. As the July 2015 launch approached, Microsoft automatically downloaded the Windows 10 upgrade to Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 machines, whose owners had reserved a copy via an auto-installed app. Weeks later, Microsoft went even further, automatically downloading the Windows 10 upgrade to devices whose owners had not expressed any interest in the new OS. The change upset some users who complained that the unsolicited downloads caused them to exceed their internet provider's data caps or seized storage space without their consent. And for most people who have a storage cap, it's some of them are 10 megabits, 5 bytes, some of them are 5 megabytes, and the Sierra upgrade tips the scale of 4.8 megabytes, so that's a serious concern. A support document that was revamped on Friday to account for Sierra's auto-download made mention of one way that Apple figured to preempt bandwidth theft critics. Large automatic downloads don't occur when your Mac is using a personal hotspot, the document stated, referring to the feature that lets a Mac access the internet using an iPhone cellular modem. So how do you feel about Apple adopting this Microsoft tactic? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
At least it doesn't auto-install, although right. I can kind of see that happening next.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the biggest problems we see in our shop is people that haven't loaded the upgrades and then suddenly something stops working. And they're running, you know, 3, 4, 5 year-old versions. And it's kind of frustrating now that most of them, you know, average folks, they don't even know there was an upgrade available. And the system warns you about updates, but never about upgrades, which has, you know, upgrades can cause issues, so that's always been a good thing. But for developers, it's always an issue. And this is some of the same reasons Microsoft did it, too. Developers want to be able to write for the latest OS and not have to worry about backward compatibility. But what we see is on older and older computers, even though Apple says the minimum RAM requirement is 2 gigs, it's not quite right. You know,
not entirely.
Technically,
accurate.
It runs on 2 gigs. Yes, it will.
Yeah,
it's like running Windows 10 on 2 gigs. Yeah, technically, so it works.
It runs,
But you want at least 4, maybe 8.
Mm-hmm.
And on some of the older machines, you can't put that much memory in. One of the things that was Sarah that it did do is it cut off the old computers by 2 or 3 years again now. So now you have to have at least a 2009 computer to run Sierra. But who knows what's going to happen next? Is Apple going to start doing auto installs like Microsoft did? And I can't imagine they will after all the backlash Microsoft got after that. But they're doing this auto download after all the backlash Microsoft got for that too.
So here's the moral.
So if you want to go into your system preferences under App Store, turn off automatically download new updates.
Well, no, the moral of this story is back up.
Back up, yep.
Make sure you have several good backups of all your data, because we have seen time and time again, not just with Macs, but with Apple machines and with Linux machines, that upgrading can cause issues.
Yep. We had a customer this week. He intentionally installed Sierra without checking application compatibility, and his version of QuickBooks didn't work on Sierra. So so the free system upgrade caused him to spend $300 to buy a new QuickBooks.
Right. And so, or you could just do Intuit online, right? QuickBooks online.
$50 a month.
Oh, I did not know this.
Subscription only.
Yeah. Okay. But at any rate, the basic idea here is do your backups. And with something like QuickBooks, it doesn't back up in the usual place unless you change some things in the system. So you may not be backing up QuickBooks.
Right. And make sure you back up your document, not the application icon.
Right.
We've had a lot of people over the years, you click the QuickBooks icon to launch QuickBooks and your document is there for you. So they back up the application icon without realizing that's not really the document.
Somewhere in the preferences, you will find a space that says where do you want to save your data?
Yep.
And that's where you want to make sure that you're backing up. That's the place you want to back up. You can change it, but then you have to, I believe, manually move your data to that new place.
I think so, yeah.
I don't believe it does that automatically. So there's a lot more to it than just going in and clicking a couple of things. So make sure you're backing up all your data all the time, because if Sierra does update onto your machine automatically and it screws up and you don't have a backup, you're done.
And we've been recommending in general, don't upgrade to Sierra yet. Wait for the first patch, the 10.12.1 patch.
Right.
Let someone else find the bugs.
Right.
You don't need to.
Right. Now, of course, you may not have the chance.
Yeah. So
at least here it doesn't actually install.
Yeah.
And many people nowadays have very large hard drives, and so 4.8 gigs is not so much.
Going back now, especially in Apple's cases, going to laptops with flash drives, 128 gig flash drives is where they start now. You can have it fast, or you can have it big. If you want fast and big, it's expensive.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
Although prices are coming down.
One thing I've noticed, though, in all the repairs I've have come in the shop, very few desktops. I'd say over 80% of them are all laptops.
They like the portability of laptops. Even though a desktop gives you more bang for the buck, it's not as portable.
Well, this is what I tell people all the time. I say, what should I get? And I say, you see that? Or they'll say, I'm thinking of getting a laptop. And I'll say, where are you going to take it? Well, nowhere.
Yeah.
Then why are you buying a laptop?
Get a big desktop screen and a tablet. And that'll probably cost less than the laptop did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now you can get 27-inch monitors for a darn good couple $100.
Well, but what I tell people is you're paying, depending on what you get, but bang for the buck, you're paying about $300 to put whatever you would have had on your desktop on a laptop. If you're going to carry it around, then yes, it's worth it.
You can buy a lot of extension cords for $300.
Right. But if you're really only ever going to use it in one place, spend the same amount of money, but get more stuff in your computer, more RAM, a better processor, more hard drive. And then you've got a system that's just more powerful, but you can't move it around. But if you're not going to move it around anyway, why are you spending the money on a laptop? That extra money that only goes to making it portable.
Well, like I say, a lot of them are going towards Chromebooks. Mm-hmm. I just had another person come in, and I asked, because this machine is like 8 years old, and the internal Wi-Fi isn't working. I just can't get it since, in Windows 10, it just won't turn on.
Yep.
So, it's one of those times, well, what do you do with it? Well, I mainly just go on the internet. I check emails and, check the web and everything else. I says, Chromebook. So, and you can put all your photos up there with Google Photo. It's got external, you can hook up an external hard drive.
Right.
If you want to save stuff off to there. But, well, what about installing programs? I said, you go to the Google Store. They've got so many apps there that you can put on there for the various things you want to do as far as editing photos, doing, listening to music, radio stations and everything. iHeartRadio app is there. There's not much that you can't download out of the Google App Store to get to run on there. And what is it next year, all the Android apps are going to work on the Chromebook. So any Android
on a new Chromebook.
Yeah. Well, the one I have.
Not mine, but yours.
I'll be able to get any of the apps for that.
Yep.
Out of the Chromebook store or the Google, the App Store.
Yeah.
From Chrome. So, it's good all the way around.
Yeah. For example, I use Google Drive, but you can get a Dropbox connection so that you can, from your Chromebook, you can go do stuff with Google Drive. There are half a dozen, you're right, radio apps. Radio Player Live is the one I used to use, except I think they changed the name now. And I can get Jazz 90.1 on it and listen anytime I want.
I mean, everything's up there for the most part of what you want to do.
Yep.
And, so a lot of folks, and like I say, if you want a bigger screen, well, that's no problem. It's got an HDMI cable. You pick up one of the newer TVs, monitors, like I said, I think I saw a 27-inch monitor you can get for like $199.
Yeah.
You can hook that up to it and away you go.
And for those of you Mac users that are interested in learning more about Sierra, the Apple Cider Users Group is going to be hosting Adam Angst from Tidbits Publishing next Wednesday, October 12th at 7 p.m. at the East High School Forum Room. He's going to be talking about Sierra and Siri. The biggest new front-facing feature of Sierra is now Siri on the desktop. So we've already heard people calling it macOS Siri. Sierra and Siri are so close phonetically anyway.
Right.
So that'll be interesting. And you can find out more there at applecider.org.
And for those of you in the mid-southern tier, whatever they call that, I'll be in Vestal, New York, Monday evening, talking to some people in the user group there.
There's a pancake place there that makes really good maple syrup.
Yeah, but it's only during, the maple syrup. Yeah,
maple syrup season.
Yeah, maple syrup season. You can go down there and pay one price and eat all the pancakes you want. And maple syrup is made right there on site.
Yeah, it's the Southern Tier Personal Computing Club. I'll be there. I think it's 7 to 9.
Oh, you're in Broome County.
I'm in Broome County, not Bloom County. Yeah. Broome County. Mm. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention. Microsoft just made a change. Very quiet, little, subtle, quiet change. To the way that the life cycle works. The old life cycles are still in place so far, but Microsoft's new life cycle is basically we're going to do whatever we want. they basically said
that's no different than what they do now.
Right, well, at least they published what they were going to do.
Right. Now we already know that the next version of Windows will just be called Windows. Numbers are going to go away. Right. And it will be a subscription model service. In conjunction with that, which means you'll pay for Windows every year, by the way. In conjunction with that, they are changing the lifecycle support to basically say whatever the current model is. So if you don't pay and you aren't upgrading, you'll have no support.
But hardly anyone gets support from Microsoft anyway, at least real Microsoft people.
Well, but by support, they also mean updates.
Yeah.
Right? So right now, for example, Windows 8.1 is in extended support. So what that means is if your company has paid for support on Windows 8.1, then you will continue to get support. And if it is an important security update, you might get it. But that's the way that works. All right, listen, we're going to take another quick break, back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Sound Bites. It is the truly great, and thanks to you, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Oh, I have to read this, Dave. A Southwest Airlines flight scheduled to leave Louisville, Kentucky on Wednesday morning was evacuated on the runway after a passenger's Samsung Note 7 cell phone caught fire, passengers and the airline said. Southwest said in a statement that passengers and airline employees were taken off Flight 994, which was scheduled to leave for Baltimore after a customer reported smoke emitting from a Samsung electronic device. The passenger was identified as Brian Green and his phone as a replacement Galaxy Note 7. A Samsung spokesrobot said in a statement on Wednesday that the company was unable to immediately confirm which device was involved in the episode because it burned up. We are working with the authorities in Southwest now to recover the device and confirm the cause, the statement said. Once we've examined the device, we'll have more information to share. The company, which is the world's largest cell phone, smartphone maker, announced last month that it would replace 2.5 million Galaxy Note 7s because of a flaw in the battery cell that could result in the devices bursting into flames or exploding. Mr. Green said he had picked up the new phone on September 21st after the recall. The episode could be damaging for Samsung because the replacement devices were thought to be safe. The new models had been approved by the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission, which on Wednesday said it was investigating the episode. In a statement, the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission chairman, Elliot F. Kay, encouraged owners of the smartphone to turn it off and immediately participate in the recall. He also said that staff members had reached out to the Federal Aviation Administration, Samsung, and Mr. Green, noting that the agency is moving expeditiously to investigate this incident. A retired teacher was one of the passengers evacuated from the flight. She said that a woman sitting near the phone's owner had told her that the device had just been powered down when it caught fire. The owner quickly dropped the device on the floor. A flight attendant rushed to the front to consult with another attendant. The two flight attendants went into the cockpit, and within seconds, the captain came out and calmly told passengers that the plane had to be evacuated. As the passengers disembarked, the smell of smoke began to permeate the plane. The passengers were eventually told that a hole had burned through the floor. Let's stop and think about that for a second. This phone burned so hot, it burned through the skin of an airplane. After about 2 hours, she said the flight was canceled and passengers were allowed back onto the plane to recover their baggage. This could have happened moments after we took off or in the air, the teacher said. It could have been a catastrophe. Earlier this year, Qantas banned Samsung Galaxy Note 7 smartphones from its flights because of instances in which they caught fire when business class passengers dropped their devices into the electronically activated seats, crushing the phone and damaging the battery. Air France also said that it had several in-flight smoke or fire events that were set off the same way. The Federal Aviation Administration strongly urged owners not to use the phones on planes before the recall was ordered. So, are you carrying a ticking time bomb like Dave Boom Boom Enright? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
As we said before, you know, this is one incident. And since the recall of...
Bad timing, though.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Well, maybe
that's
good, because she was the one person that said, at least we're not in the air.
Right.
Yeah, but like any other devices, how many other phones... overheat or anything else. Yep. Right now, they're just playing on the fact that, Samsung just did a total recall and got, all these phones replaced and everything else, yada, yada, yada. I mean, you don't hear of anybody else's phones that might have heated up or do this or that or failed. It's an electronic device.
Right.
Hello, it's no different than anything else.
Had it been an iPhone or a Huawei or the Google phone, the Pixel, people would have said, wow, we don't know if this is another Note 7 issue or just an incident. Yeah. But because it's a Note 7, it's automatically horrible.
Oh, yes. And you know what? Mine has been fantastic. Even my other one. I didn't have an issue with it. It was fine, but they wanted me to, they were recalling it, and I kept getting the notes, so I did on the 21st also. I've had mine since the 21st, and it was no problem. They switched it over. Everything moved over. It's been running great. It's, holding a charge. It doesn't get warm or any of those other things. So, again, I think it's just an isolated incident, just like any other electronic device.
Really, you could think of it as a public service because it's something to cuddle up to on those cold winter nights.
Yeah. There you go.
My fear is that airlines will ban electronic devices. Just as we're starting to see the relaxation of using electronic devices on the airplane, they're going to ban them completely. But not even that. There was that. In fact, I just saw the article here. There was a 787 in Boston. Where the plane's own lithium battery failed and started smoking.
The problem is really lithium batteries. Yeah. One of the things about, and it may well be some of the electronics in the specific Samsung Galaxy Note 7s are causing an issue as well.
Some of the cheaper manufacturers, maybe.
Exactly. And certainly that was the original thought about the issue of the battery, which is that all of the batteries that caused an issue were from the same manufacturer. But lithium batteries are in everything now. I mean, everything. They're in your laptop, your tablet, your phone, probably in your
watch.
Watches. They're, if you've got an electric car, they're in that. They're everywhere. And, a lot of the, at work, the phone systems have a little battery in them. Yeah. Some of them are lithium. Many of them are not, but some of them are. And they're just everywhere. And so...
I use lithium batteries in my camera because they last longer.
They last longer.
And that's the point of the lithium batteries is that they're lighter and have a higher energy density and last longer than previous technologies.
And part of the problem is they're pushing that density higher and higher and higher.
To get longer battery life.
And they've passed the threshold, clearly.
Well, like we were saying before, though, it's one thing, to push the limits, as far as getting more out of a battery. But when you try to do it and get something thinner, you know, as in this case, a phone, to make it a few millimeters thinner, you know, again, that heat has to go somewheres. And, you know, I'm sorry, the old, my Galaxy 5 was a good size. It wasn't super thick, so they should have just kept it at that size. Removable battery, which I think you're going to see them go back to now. They, I think, got burned pretty good.
Well, I hope so. Apple doesn't do it, so now Samsung isn't doing it.
Yeah, but now, but Samsung just got bit in the butt that they could have saved a lot of money by just shipping out just batteries.
Orders of magnitude kind of money. I mean, yes. Instead of spending millions, they would have spent thousands.
Yes. And, you know, just ship out a new battery to say, get rid of the old one. No biggie. You know, and then if you chose not to and it worked up, then they're, you know, they're not liable.
Right. Right.
But that would have saved them bucket loads of money.
Yep. Yep.
And so for the few millimeters thinner, just to not have a removable battery was pretty dumb on their part. I'm just saying.
Well, but, you know, they're following the Google, the Apple thing.
Well.
And I don't know that that's necessarily the best thing to do. And I do get it. I get that. You know, Apple is considered by many people to be the gold standard, and a lot of people want to be the gold standard, and they think that's the way to do it. But in fact, to be entirely honest, in terms of the user experience, the inability to change the battery is an economic decision, not a user decision.
Right.
The ability to change the battery. I watch people, every time I take a trip, I watch people all crowded around the plugs in the airport. I just carry a second battery.
Yep.
If I run out of juice, I just swap the batteries. I'm done.
Mm-hmm. There was a Dilbert cartoon last week where Dogbert was suggesting a new reality show, like Big Brother, where you put 10 people in a house that only has one outlet. And the drama ensues over everyone trying to see who can charge their phone next.
Right, right, right.
And extra points for violence. But the other thing that's happening now is the recharge time. Was it the note where you get, you know, 5 hours out of 15 minutes of charging?
Right.
So so a lot of these phones now have this fast recharge mode.
Yeah, mine.
Where you can get several hours out of a few minutes of charging. They got to be putting a huge amount of current into that phone to charge it that fast. And I got to think that's overtaxing the cells now.
Could be.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, even the new Pixel XL doesn't have a changeable battery.
Well,
I think it's a mistake. Again, it's another, cheaper to make.
One of the other reasons I've read, too, is not just for the thinness, but the fact that there's a door on it means that people will take the door off and muck gets inside. And causes more problems later.
Well, yes and no. I don't have a door on mine. I don't. Mine is waterproof. The same 67 that the new iPhone is. By the way, the new commercial where the guy gets on the bike and it's raining, and he goes out and he says, "The new iPhone, it's magical." It's not magical to be waterproof. My phone's been waterproof for 3 years.
Yeah, who's that rapper that was
pouring
champagne
on the battery? It is new for the iPhones.
Yeah.
What?
It is for the iPhones.
It is magical for the iPhone, yeah.
They're just finally catching up.
Thank God Apple invented that because I've only had it for 3 years. But the basic idea is that
my Note 7's got it.
Right. I think one of the issues, though, and they alluded to it in that story, is that people keep the phone in their pockets.
Mm-hmm.
So when they sit, they put a lot of stress on that phone.
And that's why it bends, too.
That's why it bends, but that also is going to cause that battery to bend. Even if it doesn't bend enough to permanently bend the device, it's putting extra stress on it in ways that it wasn't designed to move. So, for example, I keep mine in a pouch on my waist. And I know that makes me look like a dork, but you know what? The last time I cared what somebody else thought, I was like 15.
At least you only have
one. And it didn't work out with her either.
At least you only have one thing on a pouch.
That's right.
You need several to make a true utility belt.
That's right. I don't have a full utility belt. And find a tiny little grappling hook that'll hold my weight.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
But because I have it on my belt, it never flexes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I think that's a part of the problem. One of the things they alluded to was that the ones that have all caught fire were when you get into your seat, particularly those electric seats they have in first and class on a lot of flights, mm-hmm. and the seat, you move the seat around and suddenly you're wrenching your body in odd little ways. And mm-hmm. and who doesn't sit in those seats and after a long flight you start to stretch while you're sitting in the seat. Yeah. That phone's in your pocket. It's getting stressed again. Mm-hmm. Mine doesn't do that. It sits in the pouch. Even so, I've certainly dropped it enough that now every once in a while it dings all by itself. Yeah. I don't quite know what that's about, but it...
I remember, I think it was high school, feeling this warmth in my pocket.
Sure.
Yeah, my pocket got really
hot. That's high school, all right.
Yeah. And was almost burning my leg, and you know, I jumped up in class, and for some reason, I can't remember now, I had a 9-volt battery in my pocket.
Oh!
Which shorted against the quarter in my pocket.
Yep.
Because the terminals on a 9-volt are at the
right
same
there.
End.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so I just remember burning a hole in my, almost burning a hole in my leg, and I don't remember why I had a 9-volt battery in my pocket.
Right. But yes, and that's part of it. If you start stretching it yep. like that and stressing it and bending it, you're going to short out one of those little internal connections, yep. which, to Dave's point, because the batteries are now so thin, those uh-huh. points are much closer together than they used to be.
Yep. Yipper.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi. Question on processors. I need to get a new laptop and just a bare one. And wanted to know that your recommendations on a i5 versus an AMD A10.
What operating system?
Windows 10.
What are you going to do with it?
Mostly word processing and internet. I don't do any gaming. I occasionally watch a YouTube video.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Nope. There are very few differences between them now. The differences that there are not things you're going to have to worry about.
Okay.
One of the sneaky things that the chip manufacturers do, which then leads into the computers, is you can have a high-end, expensive i5 and a low-end, cheap i5.
Ah.
And they both say i5. One's going to be $200 cheaper, and it's going to run significantly slower. And so it's very hard to compare... even within the same product family, let alone trying to compare Intel versus AMD. So you kind of have to look at a little more beyond that. But in your case, since you're not doing anything processor intensive, so if you were doing 3D modeling or video editing or something really hard, then you would definitely want to make sure you got a higher end chip with more cache in it, because that can lead to much greater performance later on.
Okay, but I don't need to worry about that.
Right.
No, you really don't. Unless you're doing some fairly high-end esoteric things, high-end math and things like that, the differences are essentially non-existent. And even there, they're minimal.
Okay.
So if you get, again, Steve is right, look at the specs. A cheap i5 is not nearly as powerful as an expensive i5. So check the one you're planning to get versus the A10 to see what the specs are like.
Did I say i5 earlier? It's actually i3 that I was comparing.
Oh, okay. That's even different. So, yeah, you can go either way. I believe the A10 is more equivalent to the i5
huh.
than to the I think. Believe me, that's not my area of expertise, and I haven't looked it up in a while yet. But the best thing to do in terms of what you want to do, it doesn't matter. So the best thing to do for you would be to look at the various specs of the products and the price points and pick the best bang for the buck.
And getting at least 8 gigs of RAM is probably going to be much more useful than a faster processor for what you're doing.
And a better video card if you're looking at, if you're doing, you know, YouTube videos and things like that. Those things are actually more important than the processor.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, thanks for your help.
All right.
Bye.
In fact, you could probably do with a Chromebook.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have poor internet stuff.
Oh, well, yeah. That's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Move in with Dave. He's going to get green light someday.
I wish I could.
Fight me.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Good
Bye.
Luck. Yeah, you're in Ithaca. It's a different story there. The basic idea here is that the processor is becoming less important. And that's a very difficult thing for people with Chromebooks to wrap their heads around. You know, for many years, the specs were sacrosanct.
Speeds and feeds.
Right. How powerful is your machine? In my Chromebook, 99% of what it does on the web. It does at the other end, in the server end of the server client relationship. And so consequently, when you buy a Chromebook, the externals, how good is the screen, how good is the keyboard, are far more important than the processor inside. Certainly the amount of RAM still is important. I have only 2 gigs of RAM in this machine, and I probably never have more than a dozen, 15 maybe, tabs open at once. Things like YouTube and Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets and things like that. And by the time I get that 15th one open, it's a tiny bit slower. A 4 gig machine would probably be great. Am I listening to music in the background there? All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 42 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, member supported. Thank you very much. Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 46 minutes after the hour, we have Steve from Greece on the line. What's up, Steve?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I didn't want you to think I was forgetting about you.
No, thank you. It's been bleak for us, but we're glad you called in.
So I have a question about cell phone signal reception strength. I've got an Exceltel. It's a track phone. I've got an LG 2 that's hooked to Ring Plus. They're both on Sprint. The track phone seems to be more sensitive to signal strength. In other words, the track phone pulls in a better signal. I can get it more frequently than I can with the LG 2.
Yep.
I don't know if that's a function of being a member of Ring Plus. It shouldn't be. They're both Sprint.
Basically,
and the bottom line, is there any standard for finding out how much sensitivity your phone has?
Well, yes and no. There are apps you can download that will show you what it believes the signal strength is on that phone.
Right.
But again, it's comparative. And it's simply, it's one, it's two things, three things. Nobody expects
Nobody
a Spanish Inquisition.
Spanish.
Right. Basically, or as Papa used to say, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. It's three things. First is how you hold it. Remember, there was one of the gates for the
and that's the problem is the antenna. If you're old enough to remember early phones, they had giant antennas on them, and then the antennas got smaller and retractable. And you'd have to pull the antenna out to actually use it, and then it was just a stub on the phone. And now all the antennas are inside the phone, and we complain about signal strength.
Right. So where the antenna is in the phone, and whether or not you're covering it with your hand when you hold the phone, can attenuate the signal. The second thing is, what's the case made out of? That can attenuate the signal. And the third is, who made the antenna end of the radio? And that can change the signal strength. So there's a bunch of stuff that includes that. There are devices that purport to increase signal strength. Those little stickers that you can put on the back of the phone that have little circuits in them. That's mostly just so much baloney, but
if you can hook an antenna up and have an external antenna.
Right. But mostly you can't. So really it's just generally speaking, the way the phone is made.
If I'm out looking for a new phone and that's one of the important specs I would like, I can't find specs anywhere for reception strength. Like FM radio, you can find that all over the place, but is there any spec that I can research for a phone?
I've never seen one, no.
And part of the problem is the same phone on a different cellular network might work better because that network has more towers.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. I mean, you're getting a better signal strength if it's working better.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking for a sensitivity rating that I could compare from phone to phone to phone.
Well, technically, the signal strength should be in decibels. Not many companies will.
Yeah, I know what you're asking for. I've never seen that spec on any site ever.
Okay, I spent half an hour trying to find a stupid any place with a spec.
Yeah. No. I mean, I've seen lots of spec sites, but nothing that has that particular spec.
Right.
I agree. I wish they did, but they don't. Half the time, they don't even talk about the. They'll talk about what network it works on, but they don't talk at all about the hardware that makes it work on that particular network.
Right.
For example, I'm looking at the new Pixel XL, and it says, you know, what technology does it have for the network? Well, GSM, CDMA, blah, 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 blah. But it doesn't say, you know, who makes the chip or how long the antenna is or where the antenna is in the body. Those are all the things that talk about signal strength.
Right. All right. Or the things are too expensive to buy another phone that doesn't work well.
Check the return policy. A lot of companies will give you a week or two. Try it out, and if it doesn't work, you might have to try a different model.
And like I said, if you're, you know, both Android and iOS have apps you can download for signal strength.
Right. I've got that, but it does look to be a little bit different, but it's the same. I mean, the phones are right next to each other, and I get different results.
And they're both on the same network.
Yeah.
Yeah, so one's probably has a better antenna than the other.
Yeah, that's really what it's going to come down to. And I wish I wish there was a site that does that, but I've never found one. If anybody out there knows of one, please call in.
I see a lot of people asking the same thing.
Yeah, a lot of people are asking it. I've not seen a site that has it.
Because they don't want you to know how poor they are.
Well, yeah, maybe, yes. But the other part of the problem, of course, is, again, there are so many variables.
Right. All right. I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and experiment with phones instead of...
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Love the show.
Yep. You know what you might try?
What?
And if they'll let you do it, when you go into the store, bring your phone, run the app.
Oh, yeah.
And if they'll let you run it on their phone, you can at least see the difference between those two phones in that environment.
And go to the back of the store, surrounded by as much metal as you can.
Right.
True. Okay. Hey, it's a plan.
It's a plan anyway.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Have fun.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
Now, the iPhone added a feature last iOS that caused a lot of problems for someone, that if you're in weak cellular area, it will automatically switch to Wi-Fi if you turn this feature on, and it was on by default in the beginning.
Right.
So people started getting huge bills, and it will work the other way too. If your Wi-Fi signal is weak, it will switch to cellular.
That's where the bills come in.
So you can run up a huge cell bill, or you can run up your data cap on your Wi-Fi.
Well, and speaking of that, Google Fi, which is a phone system, is strictly a Wi-Fi phone, and if you're not in the Wi-Fi area, it switches you to a Sprint network, Sprint or T-Mobile. I think it does both. And at any rate, the point here is that there are a lot of phones that do Wi-Fi now, and depending on where you are, so for example, when I'm home or when I'm here, I can be on Wi-Fi on my phone and not use any of my data minutes.
That's what I do.
Right, not use any of my minutes. And then when I'm out and about, then I'm on my minutes. But life is much easier. But yeah, I'm talking about for phone calls, right? So I can use, you know, if you...
Well, you're a Luddite. You actually use your phone for phone calls?
I do, actually. Once in a while, I use my phone for a phone call. Yeah. Mostly it's just something I cuddle up to be warm at night.
No, for data in it, yeah, I've gotten to where I keep the Wi-Fi at work.
Data.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I found out that, you know, I could save quite a bit just by going off the Wi-Fi network right there at work. And it's like, why not? You know, then burn up my data.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Many phones now have options in them to say, you know, don't download updates over cellular, only over wireless, et cetera, et cetera. So, and of course, it also depends on 150 other things as well. Back in the day, when I had a Verizon phone and one of my students had a Sprint phone, RIT had a Verizon tower on campus, but the others hadn't been built yet. So I'd be in the elevator riding down talking to my wife, and the student would be riding with me, and he had short, succinct phrases about the fact that I could get a signal and he couldn't. All right, that sound tells me that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to all of you called in. Let us never forget that it is you who makes this show what it is, and we are very grateful. Don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And you will see us in just another week at the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It is Soundbites and the truly great. And thanks to you, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.